House Interim Committee on Transportation. And we will head down our agenda to a report from the Innovative Finance Advisory Committee. And we've got Jim Witte, Doug Goh, and Bruce Warner here to testify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Witte, the ODOT Administrator for Transportation Funding Task Forces. In this case, I'm the Administrator for the Innovative Finance Advisory Committee. In passing Senate Bill 966, the 2001 Legislative Assembly recognized the shortage of traditional revenues for funding large, complex transportation projects in Oregon. The legislature also recognized the potential opportunity to involve the private sector in building transportation projects in Oregon, as other states have done in recent years. Bruce Warner will give you a little background upon the work ODOT is doing to implement Senate Bill 966, and he'll discuss the nature of the private sector involvement in public-private partnerships for transportation projects. Following Director Warner will be Doug Goh of the Ada Wynn Law Firm in Portland and a member of the Innovative Finance Advisory Committee to outline some of the committee's findings and recommendations to date. Finally, Director Warner will summarize our testimony.
Thank you, Jim. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bruce Warner, the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. It is a pleasure to be here, and again, you have our written material. I'll go through this very quickly. As part of the introduction, I guess I wanted to again acknowledge Senator Beverly Clarno, who is really the impetus for Senate Bill 966. And just to let you know, this bill started out on my first day as the Director of the Department of Transportation. I received a call from Senator Clarno, who wanted to get together and meet with some business folks and some of her staff and my staff to talk about ways that we could encourage private sector investment in transportation projects throughout the state of Oregon. And quite frankly, she was interested in building a project in her district. But I think what it really came down to after talking with her some is she was very interested in looking at some of the things that have been done in other states where the private sector had come in, designed, funded, built transportation investments, and was wondering if there's a way that Oregon could learn from those examples and actually encourage private sector investment in transportation projects. And Senate Bill 966 is a result of those discussions, and I do again want to acknowledge the Senator for her hard work on this. Senate Bill 966 required ODOT to form an advisory committee to assist the department in analyzing Oregon's attractiveness for such partnerships and recommend any changes to allow us to encourage its use. And the committee was formed earlier this year. I believe you have a list of the committee members attached to the testimony, and it's a very impressive list of folks. And it's some of the finest minds, I believe, in Oregon and the West Coast that have been involved in actually putting projects together and seeing projects implemented. So the people that we had around the table were folks that actually knew how to get these projects done and had real life working experience. The committee has met four times and for the most part has given us their recommendations, which you're going to hear a bit more about in just a moment. And I've had the pleasure of being part of those meetings, and I'm in awe with the knowledge and thoughts and recommendations that they came up with. They were very, very, very helpful. And again, I'm looking forward to giving a full report to you later. I think in the testimony I indicated that we try to get a report to you in March. My desire is actually to have it done in January. I'm sorry, Jim, I wanted to let you know that I want to accelerate that a bit so you have that in front of you. So with that introduction, I just again wanted to let you know a little bit about some of the background of other states, and clearly other states and in fact other nations have used public-private partnerships over the years to build a number of large projects. And ODOT and I are very interested in changing in ways that would allow us to take advantage of such partnerships in Oregon for statewide projects. I look at some of the larger projects we have. I think there are opportunities for the private sector. And frankly, I'd like to access some of the good ideas and thoughts that the private sector has employed in these other nations and states to help us. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about a public-private partnership, you don't need to look no further than Portland. And in the materials, provided you the example of the MAX light rail extension from the Gateway area to the Portland Airport. This was a project that was designed, funded, built almost entirely by the Bechtel Corporation in partnership with a number of public agencies, including the Oregon Department of Transportation. And I think it was a very successful project. It was done very quickly and, again, with very little public monies. Mr. John Carter, who's on our advisory committee, was the main driver with Bechtel who put that together. He was very instrumental in helping us put together some of the recommendations you're going to hear. And this project, if you don't understand how it was financed, is they agreed to upfront the cost of this light rail extension in exchange for lease revenues from land, vacant land that the Port of Portland owned near the airport. So again, they were taking a risk, obviously, that this area was going to develop and revenues would be adequate to cover their costs. But again, they felt it was a good business venture. So when we put this committee together, the first thing we asked the committee is, how can the private sector help? And it's clear from their advice and examples from the private sector that they do bring creativity and a different kind of creativity to transportation projects. And what I've also found out is this creativity tends to flourish outside of the normal project development process and constraints that we have. And by using this problem solving and imagination, they are able to take advantage of it in very positive ways to their advantage, but usually also to the concurrent advantage of the public. And what we found out from talking with them is a properly structured, I mean properly structured agreement, can encourage the private sector to be very attentive to things like cost estimates and make sure they're accurate and that risk assessments are real and complete. And again, because the bottom line, the rate of return is important to the private sector, they also bring management skills to creatively manage the projects, its costs, and its interface with the public. And more importantly, what we're talking about is the private investors and partners bring dollars to the table, not only just in terms of financing the projects, but the thing that we found out, and it was kind of an aha for me when I listened to this task force, is that they have the ability, if they're brought in early, to actually look at ways to leverage other opportunities, because transportation projects usually bring value to properties and to other parts of the community. And frankly, we as the private sector entity don't have either the ability or the authority to tap some of those value added to these properties. The private sector, in working with its other partners, some of the property owners and projects and other interests, can actually leverage those into other benefits for the project and help defray the cost of that. And I should note that what I heard also from the participants in this committee is that they value partnership as probably the most important thing that we can do in any of these ventures. And by that, what I think you'll hear is it's a true partnership where we're working together towards a common goal, and really the public is not just trying to shuffle off a risk to the private sector, which often is, I think, some of the ways we look at trying to bring the private sector in, to have them do something and take on a risk that was not something that the public chose to take on. I think it's also noted in the written materials, we also asked the committee to give the department some advice on our role in encouraging these partnerships in Oregon. And they noted rightfully that we as the department have a dual role. First off, we're a partner in these projects if they're involving the state highway. But we also have a fiduciary responsibility to assure that the public funds are spent properly and that we meet other legislative and policy mandates that you and federal government and others have given us. But ODOT must aid the private sector in meeting these project goals while still providing project oversight and protection for the public. And I think we can do that. The committee is, again, you're going to hear in a moment, does have some recommendations, and specifically a number of recommendations dealing with financial mechanisms. But they have given me some more recommendations on how to change the way ODOT does business to encourage private investment in our state's transportation infrastructure. So in summary, what I heard from this group is that ODOT must commit itself to an entrepreneurial approach, and I believe that's in the written material, that emphasizes an expedited partnership process, which allows us to actually get the partnerships put together very quickly, but then also places a value on innovation and expedited project delivery. I think it's also interesting to note that the private sector wants flexibility to manage risks like costs and environmental on any particular project, and can do more, as I said, if you involve them early on in the process before decisions are made on alignments or the type of project you're going to build. This allows them the greatest flexibility and ability to use their creativity to come up with good solutions. And the private sector is also very interested in risk management. And if the private sector can find a way to minimize risk, they want to have the ability to implement a project notwithstanding some of the traditional methods. And the private sector, what I'm hearing very clearly, is that they want to have performance standards rather than just requirements to meet standard specifications or day-to-day project oversight. And I think that's important that we need to also let loose of some of these projects. If we actually do have a partnership, we need to rely on our partners to deliver the project. They also want to be enabled to use their creativity and experience and are willing to actually bear the risk of having to do something over if they're in charge of making those decisions. The committee will also make recommendations regarding the need to help defray some of the upfront costs to attract private investment and do some of the preliminary design and planning work to move these projects into an actual agreement stage. And in fact, they want us to come up with some way to formalize what they call joint powers authority, or, and most of you know it, as intergovernmental agreements, where on some of these larger projects that go between and over boundaries of individual jurisdictions, you have one entity assigned to make the decisions on a project, or you have an agreement about how those decisions will be made so you don't have dueling decisions by dueling public agencies. And this has been very successful throughout the United States, and I think in Oregon the MACS extension is a good example of that. And more importantly, the committee is telling us what we can do to attract the private sector to Oregon and giving us a number of recommendations. So without taking a lot more time, what I'd really like to do is turn it over now to Mr. Doug Goh and talk about some of the recommendations that the committee has actually given us and actually formalized a bit more in the meeting yesterday.
Thank you, Bruce. Mr. Co-Chairs, for the record, my name is Doug Goh. I chair the public finance group of the Ader Wynn Law Firm in Portland at 222 Southwest Columbia. It is my privilege to be here this afternoon in my capacity as a member of the Innovative Finance Advisory Committee. The Advisory Committee recommends a new unit be formed within ODOT's Director's Office to work effectively with the private sector on projects to enable acceleration and cost effectiveness in project delivery. The Innovative Partnerships Unit would be situated at the highest level within ODOT. The unit would have the responsibility to engage the private sector, the authority to assemble and manage innovative partnership arrangements, and the ability to handle unsolicited proposals from the private sector. And at this point, I might just mention that I had the privilege of being involved in the airport light rail project that Bruce mentioned. And that really was an example of an unsolicited project. And I had the privilege of observing that process in my role as bond counsel for the Port of Portland and seeing the various players, including Bechtel and TriMet and ODOT, come together to build a project in record time at a record in terms of a low cost and on budget. It really is an exciting project, and I think a great example that the state can build on. The Innovative Partnerships Unit would be designed to function, as Bruce mentioned, with an entrepreneurial spirit. And let me at this point also, as Bruce challenged Jim in terms of speeding up the delivery of the report, the committee has asked that when I heard from you today, both to challenge Bruce as well as to challenge you as the leaders of the legislature, that we don't want to see this just go by the wayside, that this be a 10-year process. What the committee recommends is that we'd love to, with your leadership, see the legislative process be completed, say, by the end of June, no later than the end of June, that Bruce have established within ODOT this unit by the end of September, and that in fact the first innovative project be ready for approval by this time next year. That's a challenging process, but I think given where our state's economy is, where our unmet transportation needs are, it's that sort of thing that's needed. We don't need some big, long, drawn-out process, and really wanted to convey to you the committee's sense of that urgency. Personnel in the unit would have a firm understanding of project management and finance with expertise and a commitment to innovative project delivery. This unit must achieve its mission expeditiously and thoroughly. The advisory committee recommends two ways to involve a project in innovative partnerships. Unit, project screening and unsolicited proposals. Project screening. The project screening process would determine which projects are developed enough for private sector involvement. This screen process might involve project development to the point where the project meets certain parameters for need, cost, time to completion, political support, and its ability to use innovative finance techniques such as local match, tolling capability, value capture, land donation, development rights, and bonding. The advisory committee believes that while eligible projects will range from large to small, all are likely to be currently held up for lack of funding. The advisory committee believes the screening process may aid ODOT in attracting the private sector to Oregon. And for the larger projects, again, I might just mention to provide some context. Again, we envision projects from large to small, but the large projects, we're talking about corporations who do projects around the world, huge projects, and we do have, as the committee knows better than us, some of those projects that are in Oregon. Again, what we're saying is not that the one size fits all, but that we have to be prepared to look at that full range of resources. It should be said that projects that do not make it through the screening process would not, as a matter of course, be abandoned by ODOT. Rather, these projects will be treated traditionally through the statewide transportation improvement process, or STIP, or they would also be eligible for consideration as an unsolicited proposal. And let me talk a little bit about what we have in mind in terms of the unsolicited proposal. The advisor committee advises ODOT to develop a process for accepting and evaluating unsolicited proposals from the private sector. ODOT currently has such a process for accepted unsolicited toll road proposals, but not for other innovative transportation proposals. ODOT should develop a policy to encourage the submission of unsolicited proposals within the context of its area commissions on transportation. Let me talk a little bit about the selection of the private partners in this process. The advisory committee recommends that the private sector partners in an innovative partnership must be selected carefully. For projects solicited by ODOT, partners should go through a pre-qualification process to determine eligibility for selection. The nature of the project should determine how a private sector partner is ultimately chosen. Preference should be given to either an upfront negotiated contract or a competitive race among a short list of candidates. The advisor committee recommends that for any innovative partnership, the incentives of the public and the private sector must be aligned from the outset. And again, as an observation, I think that was one of the reasons for success of airport light rail. The parties must agree how risk will be managed and allocated among the public and private sector parties. The private sector entities must agree to the importance of the public policy considerations in a project, and the public sector must recognize the importance of market-based returns on the project for the private sector. The public sector must accept that oversight for design-build-type projects must focus on adherence to performance criteria and standards as a measure of performance rather than complying simply with strict specifications. Again, you know, this is a change of thinking. This is, again, we're trying to live up to the name innovative here. This is not the same old, same old. How do we develop innovative projects? The advisory committee advises that it is most advantageous to engage a private sector partner early in the process. The private sector partner is more likely to commit significant investment dollars when the firm has the opportunity to shape the course of the project. Let me now talk about the committee looked and identified a number of innovative finance mechanisms, and a number of those I think are listed in the materials that we provided, and there will be a number of additional mechanisms identified in the report that we provide. Let me just touch on a few of those. First of all would be the ODOT credit backstop. And ODOT, as you know, is frankly, its credit is stronger than the state of Oregon's credit. The currently the highway fund has been managed well, the bonding program has been managed well, and whenever in the last few years that we've met with the rating agencies, they've had nothing but praise for the program. They've also challenged, frankly, the state to do more in the transportation area, but certainly when it comes to the strength of the department's credit, it comes with very, very high plaudits. So what does that mean? That means that in these projects, local participation is one of the things that the committee thinks is crucial. Often the local participation, let's take for one example, system development charges. Systems development charges are viewed by the rating agencies and by investment banks, commercial banks, as something of a volatile revenue source. And so standing by themselves, is not viewed as something that would be highly rated or desirable. But if you were able to put the backstop of either the infrastructure bank or, I'd say, on a subordinate basis, the highway user taxes, which are, again, very highly rated, you would have a very strong credit that you can provide to that local partner to enhance the credit and its really stream of revenues. Obviously, you would do that in a way that you never believe that the highway fund is ever going to be called upon on a subordinate basis, because you're going to have done your studies and analysis that shows, in fact, that, for example, SDCs are, in fact, going to be more than sufficient to pay the debt. But it's a way to partner with the local governments and provide them a lot of value. Some of the, just to give you kind of a magnitude, if you will, one of the investment bankers who was on the Innovative Finance Committee did some looking at this, and in the current market might make close to 1% difference in terms of the interest rates. That 1%, obviously, on a large project, that's a whole lot of money. Garvey bonds. Garvey bonds is another structure that has not been used in Oregon. Garveys are grant anticipation revenue vehicles. How's that for an acronym? All it really means, it's a form of bonding or finance that allows you to issue long-term debt that's secured by anticipated revenues from federal transportation dollars. It's been used in a number of states quite successfully. Again, is it a solution to all of the transportation ills? No, but it's one of those important arrows in the quiver, so to speak, that we think that Oregon should have and is something that the committee recommends for your consideration. Changes to the Transportation Infrastructure Bank. The Advisory Committee recommends expanding public and private participation in the Infrastructure Bank and increasing the credit capacity of the bank. Currently, the bank is, as a practical matter, is limited to $10 to $15 million of loans at any time. Frankly, you know, $10 to $15 million doesn't get you very far today. And so the committee believes that that's something in terms of increasing the capacity of the Infrastructure Bank, again, a way to help your local partners in these projects. The last finance mechanism I'll mention is the value capture financing. And the advisory committee has identified many ways that value added to land from a transportation project can be captured to assist financing of the project. These methodologies range from land trading to development rights to traffic impact fees to tax increment financing. For ODOT to use a number of these finance mechanisms, statutory changes are required, and the advisory committee asked that I convey to you today that ask for your support in effectuating any necessary legislative changes to bring about both the overall mission of the committee, the establishment of the Innovative Partnerships Unit, and the ability to use these innovative finance mechanisms. Bruce?
In summary, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, I think what you're seeing here is some exciting possibilities. And clearly what you're seeing is the department would like to venture into these areas. We have been doing a lot of things more aggressively in terms of utilizing financing tools available to us from the federal government that have not been used before. What you're hearing from the committee is there's a number of areas where they're recommending we explore new tools to leverage money from the private sector, and I'm excited about it and hope that we'll have a report to you early on in your session that will allow you to actually consider some of the recommendations in a positive manner. And I look forward to the challenge that Mr. Goh has given us. I think that with some of the tools and the organization put in place, there are projects out there which I believe the private sector is interested in coming to us and talking to us about, but they want to make quite frankly want to make sure that we have the capabilities and tools in place to be able to pull it off. So with that, I think we'd end our presentation and ask the committee if you have any questions of us.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Of all the things that have happened under the radar screen this interim that caused me a great amount of excitement, this is probably the top of the list. I don't know if very many people really understood what it was that we were voting on when we voted and passed Senate Bill 966 last regular session. I'm really, really excited about the product that's come out of this task force. I've had the opportunity to travel to a few states that are using some of these techniques. And I just wish that I've been able to take the entire committee on some of those trips to see how other states are really moving forward in an aggressive manner, using techniques that this task force has come up with. I think we can learn a great amount from what other states have done and are doing. Take the best of those things and bring them to Oregon and make them work here as well. So I'm very very happy with that. The statutory changes that are going to be necessary. You have a sense of the timeline. I understand that in the document you're talking about having the report written by March, but I understand you moved that up to January. Is there a likelihood that we can have those specific statutory changes sooner rather than later so that we can continue to push this issue and push this forward?
Mr. Chair, we've been assigned a representative from the Attorney General's office to work on this project. They've already done work on the innovative finance mechanisms themselves. Now it's the program that has to be evaluated. And we didn't really complete that work until last night. So as soon as I finish writing up the substance of the report, which ought to be by Friday, I'm half finished already, it'll go right to them, and then we'll start to learn what we have to do, or what, where law changes are required. So we're going to push the envelope. We're just going to be working on this night and day and getting it to you. So the ODOT staff's already been identified to do the first cut on what needs to be done. And then as soon as that's done, it'll go to the AG. And then we'll be looking for a way to introduce it into the number of bills probably, into the process.
Very good. I think that we talk about moving a transportation funding package through the next legislative session. There'll be great interest from the legislature side to incorporate some of these innovative both contracting and finance tools into kind of an overall package to move forward. And I'm fairly certain that legislatures are going to want to do that. Are there any additional comments or questions for this panel? Representative Brown.
Mr. Chair, can you share with me from other states maybe some small projects? I can see the max line, but my brother-in-law lives in Condon, Oregon. I can't see the max line in Condon, Oregon. So what are some small projects that we would do outside the metropolitan area that might fit into this, or are there some that would fit into that?
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Brown, I'll try to answer, and maybe Mr. Goh has some other examples here. Many of the projects you see in other states are large projects. Many of them are outside of the urban areas. An example of one that's been up and running for a while is State Route 91 in Orange County, California. I don't know whether you've seen that. That's a roadway that travels from the urban area to the rural area. It's a joint public-private partnership project that was built using private dollars to build a toll lane on an existing facility using public right-of-way and set up a new toll authority. I don't know the price tag on that. It wasn't a very expensive project by today's standards, but again, it's been very successful. There's some other projects around Texas, Central Texas Turnpike, but this is a $3 billion project. It's a combination of public and private dollars, which is under construction, however. And I don't have any specifics of small-scale projects that I can recall to mind. Doug, do you have any thoughts there?
First of all, Representative, I've had the pleasure of being in Condon a number of times, and it's a wonderful place. And one of the projects, actually, that we did talk about in the context, I'm going to respond to your program in terms of an example of the innovative finance, if I might. One of the projects that was presented to the committee was the Redmond Bypass. The city of Redmond has indicated a willingness to both use access tax increment funding as well as systems development charges as potential revenue sources to help partner with ODOT on a project. We think that that's the example that I used earlier in terms of helping ODOT leverage with those private dollars or the local dollars is an example of a project that I think is not a grand scale project. It's an important local project. It's very important to them, but it's not a, you know, an I-5 bridge sort of project, for example.
Thanks. I may be able to add something here that would be helpful. A lot of these projects will be large, and that's actually a good thing, because if you're using private dollars to build a project, you're not using public dollars, and so there's more public dollars for other places in the state. And this actually was outlined by the advisory committee and is actually in the report that you'll get, this advantage.
And if I could elaborate even more, the Redmond Bypass was a great example of where, when we brought this project to the advisory committee to discuss, they pointed out a number of things that we could have done had we had an entrepreneurial bent that would have allowed us to, quite frankly, leverage some additional resources for that project that we had not thought about or envisioned. And if we had had the private sector involved early on, I think they would have been able to reduce the price of the project, provide other funding because of the benefits, and not be in a standard process where now the people that are out there are really looking to us to compensate them for mitigation rather than trying to figure out how to help us build the project and maybe even pay for the project. So it was a true learning experience for me listening to these folks talk about this project.
Anything else from the committee? Ms. Heaney, thank you very much for your work and for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing the report in January.
Very good.
I'd also encourage the committee as you move into this next year and opportunities to attend various legislative conferences. NCSL had a terrific program at their meeting in Denver this summer on innovative finance, transportation finance, and contracting. And the opportunity to learn from other states by attending NCSL or ALEC or some of these other conferences, I'd really encourage committee members to take advantage of those opportunities. Next, we have Jason Tell to talk to us about the federal reauthorization process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jason Tell, and I'm ODOT's federal liaison, and I've been asked to discuss the upcoming reauthorization of the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century, which is commonly known as T21. I will briefly explain what T21 is, the timeline for reauthorization. I'm going to describe a few of the factors that I think will influence reauthorization when it begins next year, and I'll discuss a few of the issues that are likely to come up. And then finally, I'll summarize some of the recommendations that the department's come up with for our congressional delegation to be ready for reauthorization. And there's two points I think I'll just make right off the top before I launch into this. And the first is, and I can't emphasize it enough, there's just a tremendous amount at stake in this legislation for the state in light of the bridge problem we're facing and a lot of the other needs we have. And secondly, I wanted to stress that since the last bill was done, I think we learned that starting early and putting a lot of upfront time into understanding what our needs are and how to communicate those at the federal level is just a critical thing. And so we've spent a lot of time over the last year, especially, but the last several years, getting prepared. So I just want to make those two points, emphasize those right before I start. But to begin with, a little background on what T21 is. Congress reauthorizes or updates major legislation in order to keep federal policies and programs up to date. T21, which is the Federal Highway and Transit Bill, essentially, was signed into law in June of 1998, and it needs to be reauthorized before the end of September next year. The law sets funding levels and policies for federal highway and transit programs, and it's coming up at a time when we're facing some new challenges, which I'll get into, including an economic slowdown and combating terrorism. And in Oregon, we also face a set of challenges such as the aging infrastructure, cracking bridge problem, rapid growth and congestion. So it's clear that we're going to need additional federal resources to strengthen our transportation system. And a point that we're really going to have to make clear is that a no-change scenario, a no-funding increase scenario, would just be devastating, I think, to the state at this point in time. Without an increase, we forego the jobs that would be created. We'll see increased load restrictions on our bridges, worsening congestion, and an overall weakening of our transportation system. As you're aware, over the course of the next bill, the federal bill, which covers a six-year time period, we need an extra $180 million a year just to replace and repair those cracked bridges on I-5 and I-84. The timeline for reauthorization is basically going to begin in earnest in February. Traditionally, when the president's budget is released, the administration introduces their version of the next bill, and then shortly thereafter, into the spring and summer, the House and Senate will draft their versions of a bill, and then they will obviously try to reach a compromise and get a bill out that the president can sign. Unfortunately, if history's any lesson to us, they probably won't get the bill done on time. And what that means is we will then enter a period of time where they pass, Congress passes, a series of temporary funding bills, and it creates some problem for us in managing a program and a set of projects when you don't know what your funding will be like. Last time around in T21, the bill was done a year late, back in 1998. The bad news was we went into this period of time of a lot of uncertainty. The good news is we ended up with about a 50% increase in funding because of some of the politics that came in line because of the timing issue. So it's just we're going to enter a period of time here in the next year at the federal level that's going to be somewhat chaotic, but hopefully when it comes out at the end, we'll be much better off than we are today. I want to briefly mention a couple factors, things that have happened this year that I think are going to kind of set the tone and the environment for Congress to reauthorize the bill next year. And there's really three events or issues. The first is the economy. Right now, we have, at the federal level, entered into deficit budgets again. After a short period of time of actually running surpluses, we're now back into a deficit budget situation, which obviously makes it difficult to go in and ask for more money. Secondly, since 9/11, defense spending and homeland security has now risen to the top priority for discretionary spending, and we expect that to continue for the next several years. Lastly, the elections in November. The Republican Party now has a majority. They have the White House, House and Senate with slim majorities, especially in the Senate. But what that means is they'll be setting the agenda and the tone for the debate next year. For our congressional delegation, we have all seven members returning, so there's no change there. And we have three members in particular who will be in important positions to influence the bill. Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Blumenauer sit on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee that will write the House version of the bill. Senator Wyden sits on the Environment and Public Works Committee, which does the highway title of the bill in the Senate. And Senator Smith sits on, with Senator Wyden, the Senate Commerce Committee, which doesn't do highways but does do some of the rail and some of the safety issues that will come up in the bill. So we do have a delegation that is in a position to influence the bill. A few of the issues that are going to come up in reauthorization, basically I'll divide them into three categories. The first is the one that we focus on the most, and that's funding. And basically there's three types of funding that we get from the federal government for transportation. The first are formula funds, and what we mean by that is in the bill there is written a formula that decides how much federal funding each state will get over the six-year life of the bill. So it's absolutely critical, as we did when T21 was written, to work with the delegation, do what we can to increase our share, essentially, of the money that's distributed to the states. So that will be a top priority for us. Over the life of the current bill, T21, those formula funds result in about $300 million a year for highways in the state. So it's a very important source of funding. Second type of funding is known as discretionary funds, and instead of having an automatic distribution of the funds are set up with a specific program goal, like the Scenic Byways program, for instance. The U.S. Department of Transportation gets the rules from the bill, basically sets up the goals of the program and how it will work, sets a funding cap, and then USDOT is free to go solicit specific projects, and they usually award the money on a competitive grant basis. The third type of funding is earmarked funds, and traditionally in the bills, Congress does earmark some funding for specific projects. In T21, it amounted to about 5% of the highway fund, so a significant amount of money, but certainly not the majority, certainly not as important as getting that formula funding up. That's where the bulk of the money comes from. Earmarks, I'll mention very briefly, are sort of a mixed bag for us. On the one hand, they're an opportunity for our delegation to bring back more money to Oregon projects, which is obviously a very good thing. The challenge can be if we end up getting an earmark for a project that wasn't really planned for, and we get an earmark, a funding amount that's less than what we asked for, and that oftentimes happens in these bills. For instance, a local government has a project they want funded. They need $10 million of federal funds. When the dust settles and the bill's done, maybe they get $5 million. Well, now they have federal funds set aside for a project that's now half-funded. They tend to want to come to the state and to our STIP process and say, ODOT, you need to come up with the rest of the money, otherwise we can't build this project. But that obviously creates a problem when we have a four-year plan in our STIP and we're spending all the money already. You're put in a position where you're going to take money away from someone who's already in line to fund the earmark or not. So it creates some challenges, and I'll get to in a minute here briefly some of the work we've done to try to prevent that from being an issue this time around. Obviously, we ODOT don't have control. The delegation gets to submit whatever projects they want to the committee, and the committee ultimately decide which ones are funded. But we are trying to be very clear with our local partners that we need to make sure the projects that we're submitting to the delegation are ones that we can build, that we can come up with a short fall in funding if we need to, and that we won't upset sort of the balance that we have in the current STIP. Beyond funding, there are two other areas that are discussed in the bill. One is the program structure, and what that means is the formula funds I mentioned, the $300 million a year, that doesn't come to the state as a block grant. There's actually a large number of program categories that each have different rules to them, and the money is subdivided into these different programs. For instance, there's an interstate maintenance program. That portion of the $300 million can only be spent on the interstate. There's a bridge program, and so much of our money has to be spent on bridges, and there's dozens of these programs. So there's an opportunity when the bill's rewritten to revisit these programs and figure out if there are changes that need to be made to make them more effective. And then the last area of issues that you can kind of think about that will come up in the bill are generally policies. And these tend to be regulatory issues, things like regulating the automotive industry, the safety features of vehicles. It can also get into some of the trucking regulations, hours of service, things like that. But there's also a whole set of non-monetary issues that are addressed in the bill. Over the past year, as I mentioned, with our Transportation Commission setting a guidance for us, the staff at ODOT, we've been working with the League of Oregon Cities, the Association of Oregon Counties, and others to develop a common set of priorities for reauthorization, the goal being to go to our delegation with a united voice to say, we need an increase in funding, this is why, and this is what will happen if we don't get it. You have, that was passed out to you, a paper that says T21 reauthorization recommendations, and that is basically what we have agreed to together. And there's a lot of different things in here that might be of interest to you. We start by pointing out some of the challenges and needs we have in Oregon with our transportation system. And then we lay out some of these specific recommendations we have that we want our delegation to fight for next year. And then we also get into some revenue scenarios and some other detailed attachments in the back. I'll just briefly point out a couple of the bullets that are kind of the highlights of what we're looking for in reauthorization. And the first is probably the most obvious one, which is we need an increase in highway and transit funding. And in the paper, it spells out some of the different ways that could be done and different funding levels that might be accomplished. Secondly, in T21, there were established what are called firewalls and funding guarantees. That is a very important part of the bill and something that we want to see continue in the next bill. What used to happen prior to 1998 in T21 is the Federal Highway Trust Fund, which obviously has balances of dollars in it at times. As construction projects are built, dollars are drawn out, but they're committed, but they sit in the trust fund until the dollars are drawn out. And the federal government, when financial times were bad, used to do some accounting tricks that basically left more money in the highway trust fund. We didn't spend some money in the highway trust fund, which allowed them to spend more money for other program areas like agriculture, defense. It was kind of an accounting trick, but the result was we had transportation dollars collected at the gas pump that were sitting in the trust fund, not being spent for transportation. So T21, one of the landmark provisions of the bill was saying the highway trust fund is off limits to the general fund. no longer can Commerce do those sort of accounting measures, and there will also be minimum funding guarantees of how much money we'll get each year. So a critical piece of the bill. The third point that we make is that we want to focus in on that formula that I mentioned, and we want to make sure that those funds are increased. Those are the dollars that go into the STIP. When we talk about programming the STIP, how much money we have to spend on the STIP is a federally mandated document that says show where your formula funds are going from the federal government. And so the formula goes up, we have more money in the STIP to do more projects. It's that simple. And then the next important point goes back to the earmarked projects that I mentioned. And our focus, our commission's focus and the department's focus to make sure the projects that we do put forward to the delegation are ones that can be done, they're eligible, they're feasible, they can be done in the time frame of the bill in order to make sure whatever happens when we see what earmarks are made in the bill, we end up doing the projects that we need to be done and we don't disrupt the STIP any more than we have to. I go on to list several other bullets here that I won't go into details now, but there's plenty more in the paper, and just conclude by reiterating that there's a tremendous amount at stake for us in reauthorization. We're trying to do our homework, and in that paper, I think you see sort of where we are today at trying to sum up what we need to do. There's going to be a lot more work that will happen this year as these different versions of bills get introduced. And that our top priority will be to get as much money back to the state as possible. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jason, very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. You make the case for increased federal funds as far as increased revenue at the federal level. Realistically, are there, tell us a little bit about what the chatter that's happening on the Hill with a president that says no new taxes, with his reelection, right around the corner. Even if there's congressional members that are talking about indexing or talking about a modest federal fuel tax increase, is that realistic?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll give you the good and the bad. I think I covered most of the bad. With the situation with defense and Homeland Security being a priority, that obviously creates a big challenge for us. You mentioned some of the politics that are involved that always go along with looking at raising taxes. That's always a tough hill to get over. And so I think the outlook, it's going to be very, very difficult, very difficult. But here are some of the positives. One, there are a few smaller things that Congress can do to generate some revenue that don't involve raising the gas tax, for instance. And the attachments in the back of the paper you have get into some of the details about those, but I'll give you a couple examples. One is there is a balance in the trust fund because of the lack of having that firewall I mentioned earlier. So right off the bat, there is a source of funding that I believe will be tapped. There are also a couple other things that can be done. One, the Federal Highway Trust Fund generates interest. As the balance of dollars sit there, it actually generates interest. The interest right now is going to the general fund. And I think there will be a move to get the interest back into the Highway Trust Fund and put it back into transportation. Another thing that can be done is ethanol gasohol is taxed at a lower rate than gasoline, and 2.5 cents of the revenue from ethanol goes to the general fund instead of the Highway Trust Fund. I think there'll be a move to get that 2.5 cents of revenue into the Highway Trust Fund as opposed to letting it go into the general fund. If you do some of those type things, you can get up to maybe a 20%, I think the number we put in here, 24% increase. That is a big assumption. I mean, I don't want to kid you, it's a very big assumption, but I think we put that in these scenarios to give people, I think there is a goal we can have that is doable. I mean, I do think it is doable. Likely, I can't say it's likely or unlikely, but it's doable to to get up to the type of increase we had in T21, up to about a 50% kind of magnitude, you really can't avoid getting into raising taxes or fees or indexing in some of these things. The discussion on the Hill and among the different interest groups has been very interesting. The private sector came out probably a year and a half, maybe even 2 years ago. Private sector being the American Road Builders, AGC, and some others, and have been advocating for tax increases. And there are a whole host of organizations that are going to be there to say we need an increase. When I think back to 1998 and T21, there's never an easy time to do these things. T21, we were fortunate in that they didn't have to raise the gas tax because there was 4.3 cents of the tax on gasoline was going to deficit reduction. As we started to move into an era of surpluses, we could argue to bring that revenue from that portion of the gas tax back into the trust fund instead of the general fund. But it wasn't easy, and I think the only reason why we got the increase is we had a very united industry, and I mean that by saying state departments of transportation, cities, counties, the private sector, governors, you name it, that came together and articulated a very clear, strong message that we have to do something, that it's just really not an option to take a buy for another 6 years. The impact of inflation, congestion, all the things that we deal with, you look at what happens over 6 years if you don't do something. And so I think we need to focus, and being as difficult as I think it will be this time, I think that just reinforces the need for the industry to come together and be united in articulating the need and why it's important. And it won't be easy, but I think we're trying to start here in Oregon with the paper that we've handed out. We've been trying to reach out to our stakeholders. I've been out to speak to many of the acts. I've been out talking to the highway users, to the MPOs, the Metropolitan Planning Organizations. Anybody who wants me to come out and talk to try to get them engaged and get it ready so that we're ready to get arm our delegation with all the reasons why they need to go help do this. So,
thanks. That's an excellent explanation. How best can we as legislators assist the department as and the states that matter as we move forward to federal level?
Mr. Chairman, I think that we will know more come February or March about what types of options are on the table. I think that a lot of organizations end up in D.C. around early March, mid-March, some a little bit earlier, some later. I would suggest taking a look at the paper, and if you would like, also call me if any of you constituents, people you work with, will be in D.C., making sure we're carrying the same message of why it's so critical to have an increase. The specifics and the tactics that are involved, I don't think we need to know or worry about right now. We certainly will worry about them, and that's a big part of what I do, and we work on with the delegation very closely. But for now, we need to build up that sense of urgency that even with the problems we're facing overseas and with terrorism and some of these other very serious problems, that we just can't ignore this. So each of you and your constituents can carry that message and make sure our delegation's hearing it, not just from the state DOT, but from as many different people as possible, and then we can work on the tactics as we get into the heart of reauthorization.
Thanks. Other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me be clear. When you're talking about an increase, are you talking about an increase overall in the formula? Are you talking about Oregon? Because I want to address either one of those.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's a good question. Maybe I wasn't very clear. We want the overall pie to grow, and that's the message that as nationally we want the national program to grow. That's important because if the overall program grows, our share of funding, even if it doesn't increase, we'll see more money in Oregon. We also, though, do look at increasing our piece of the pie, and we do look at can we get our percent of the overall funding increase. And I'll give you an example of what happened in T21. our share of the federal funding went from about 89 cents on the dollar that was contributed when we buy gas in the state and the funds from the federal gas tax get collected. Prior to T21, we got back about 89 cents of per dollar we contributed to the trust fund. We increased that up to 94 cents, and that increase means our absolute share went up as well as the overall national program grew. So that's in part why we had such a large increase in Oregon, about a 50% increase in the funds we got. So we will be looking at going into this bill. I think, first of all, we want to talk about increasing the entire national pie. But when we get into the real detailed tactical battles that happen once you get into the heart of things, when it's on the floor, when it's in committee, we will be working with our delegation to actually get that share up even higher.
A follow-up, Mr. King. Let me play the devil's advocate with you. You're Oregon, and I have some control of the money as far as your percentage of piece of pie. But I've just heard from 30 other states, and they've all told me the same thing. And you've come in, and I'm thinking, gee, Oregon is a small state, not a real big population. I don't know. Gee, I've just heard from a couple of other states. Tell me why you think Oregon should be. And then after you tell me, I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I think there's two points I would make as far as need that distinguish us. We stand out as a state. And I think the first is our unemployment. I think the recession's hit this state a lot harder than many other states, and I think we ought to make sure that people in D.C. know that. Secondly, I think the bridge problem that we have is one that isn't just an Oregon problem. I mean, whether you're a person who wants to drive through our state, or whether it's the freight that's getting to factories back east, or whether they're trying to get to our ports to get overseas, if our bridges are posted and things can't move across it, it's going to impact everybody. So that, I think that is a need can help have us stand out. I think the other thing that we can do, and I think this legislature in the last regular session recognized this, is we as a state can show that transportation is important. And we can show that by the legislature providing the funding to transportation. And this is an important point, because in T21, when the bill was being debated back in 1998, there was a provision that didn't ultimately make it into the bill, but it was in one of the versions of the bills as it was being crafted, that would have made that formula I talked about change if you as a state raised more money for transportation than another state. And they called it level of effort was sort of the concept. If a state puts more effort into fixing transportation problems, they ought to be rewarded with more federal funding. And that, as even though that specific provision didn't get in, which we did very poorly, we would have done very poorly on back in 1998, even though it didn't make it in, the federal government more and more has been moving in that direction, whether it's looking at higher match ratios, meaning if a state agrees to put in more state money into a project than the minimum required match, they have rewarded states, in essence, through these grant programs and things for doing that. So that would be the other argument I think that we can make, is one, what we did with OTO, what the legislature did by increasing the investment in transportation, and then perhaps what might happen in the future, anything that can be done to help show the states thinks transportation is a priority and is following, backing that up with investment, is something our congressional delegation can use.
I think those are very good points, Mr. Chairman. You pointed out three very good things. And one thing I just want to know, we have high unemployment, you have a bridge problem, and you can pretty well plan on a good level of support. Those are very good. Why doesn't that fall into defense? You are an entry to the country. If you have a bridge problem that you cannot transport over, particularly if you're trying to move military and heavy supplies, why would you not fit into part of the defense program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's you've hit on an important point, and it's one that I've been trying to find examples of where folks in transportation have been able to translate those kind of arguments and actually seeing dollars. So far, I haven't really seen much. Doesn't mean we shouldn't make the argument. And in fact, we're now drafting a letter that we can have sent to the new Transportation Security Administration, to the Department of Defense, and anyone else we can think of to make that the exact arguments you've made. But so far, I have to say, I haven't seen that argument yet turn into dollars. Doesn't mean it may not, and we certainly want to be there making that point. But a lot of people have been asking us about that, and it's not because we're not looking at it. It's not because there aren't other people trying. It just so far, there really hasn't been enough money left to go around, I think, from that source. But we're working on a letter as we speak to try to make those points.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason, just briefly, any ruminations that you're hearing about T21 authorization that would allow more flexibility in terms of the interstate maintenance dollars?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, yes, we have heard about more flexibility. Generally, we today have some flexibility, not a lot, but we do have some flexibility to move dollars between those program areas. The American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, which is the acronym for the group that represents all the state departments of transportation on a lot of different issues, that's one of their lead issues, is pushing for as much flexibility as possible. Many of the other program categories that we have, we can spend on the interstate. So right now, I don't see a major problem with us not being able to use our federal funds on the interstate. In fact, they generally encourage us to put money on the interstate because the federal government tries to stress those routes that link the country. So I think flexibility will be an issue on the table, and generally the last two bills have gotten more flexible as opposed to going the opposite direction.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, if I may follow up with a comment. The reason I ask you that question is that we have a construction maintenance project underway between Albany and Salem on I-5, and part of the project, or perhaps all of the project, is being conducted with maintenance dollars, as I understand it. And one of the stipulations is that the temporary lanes that are installed have to be removed at the end of that time period when that construction project is finished. And it seems to be somewhat counterproductive that those are the rules as required with the particular use of these maintenance funds, as it has been explained to me by the two fine ladies sitting in the back there on more than one occasion, as we've talked about this a lot. It would seem that it would be perhaps advantageous to us eventually to be able to utilize that base rock for additional lane capacity in that particular area. So that was the reason for my request in terms of, is there any talk about allowing that type of flexibility with those funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, I'm not aware of any, and I'm not very familiar with that specific project. I know a little bit about it, but I haven't heard anything yet.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Nobody's jumping up and down and waving their arms. One last question. You were just got here just at the tail end of our last presentation, the Innovative Finance Task Force discussion. I'm interested in how we coordinate that discussion with federal earmarks. If you've got a major project that the private sector, you know, comes to the table and says, we'd like to help put together a deal to build X project at $200 million. And I don't know if there's necessarily an answer to this right now, but it might be just something, some food for thought. But the ability to bring federal resources to play with for those large project. First of all, are all the earmarks done in right as this bill is written and drafted, or is there a pot of money that's set aside and can be tapped in over the 6-year period or life of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, they've done it a couple different ways in different bills over time. In T21 and IC, what some of the things that were in common with the last couple bills, they did earmark the full 6 years of money set aside for earmarks up front. So that was your chance when the bill was written to get the earmark. The funds were available to be spent over the 6 years for that project. So if we had an Oregon project that was in the bill, you had 6 years to get the money spent and get a project done. But all the earmarking was done in the bill. In the past, the House has generally put earmark projects in their bill at different points in time, whether subcommittee, full committee, or on the floor, but they generally put theirs in. The Senate, the last two times, did not, and they didn't earmark projects until they got into the conference committee. And so, not really sure how they're going to do it this time around. As far as innovative finance, at the federal level, T21 did have a couple provisions in it to try to encourage more innovative use of innovative finance, and state infrastructure banks were set up under a previous bill, but T21, I think, helped in some ways in that program. In other ways, the changes didn't really help us, but they have been trying to build on what little had been done previously. There's another program that goes by the acronym TIFIA, which was specifically set up and is set up for large projects. In fact, there's a minimum threshold of $100 or $150 million, $100 million, yes, even to be eligible. I am positive that in the next bill they will do more with innovative finance. I haven't heard a lot of the specifics yet of what people want changed. I think that different states are going at different speeds on experimenting with innovative finance, and so I'm not really sure where it's going to go, but it will be a part of the next bill. And so as the task force and others are working on it here in the state, we will be in a position, if we're running into some stumbling blocks where the federal rules aren't working for the types of things we want to do, I think we ought to include that in our recommendations. Today, we don't have a lot in there because when I checked around, there weren't a lot of people who knew what we wanted that we couldn't get today. So that's something we ought to make sure we add if we need to our recommendations.
One thing that I have heard, and I must have been at NCSO in the summer, was talk about lowering the TIFIA threshold from $100 million to $50 million. So more projects could become eligible for those TIFIA funds. So that's at least some folks are talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, Jason, for your testimony. Your information today is very helpful. This is our last interim committee. Appreciate all of your efforts to attend these meetings over the last year or so. Was not the typical interim. Saw way too much of you. I would have rather just seen you periodically at the Transportation Committee. But again, I do appreciate each of you taking the effort to come to these meetings, and I think that it's been valuable. I think we've had an opportunity to visit various communities around the state. I think that's valuable as well. Like to recognize Representative Brown, I believe. This will be the last opportunity to serve on a committee with you as a state representative, and we'd just like to thank you for your legislative service. The end of this year and this year as a state representative from
thank you.
Washington County. So recognize that. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
Well, I would just like to say I One of the things that most people don't realize out there is the great work the staff does for every one of these things that we've been involved in. And as I've gone out, I've convinced them, I've tried to convince them that the representatives aren't bad people, but that's a hard one. But talking about the staff is, I mean, I am so impressed with what people do here for us and how hard they work, and I just want both Patrick and Janet to know how much I appreciated being on this committee and the fact that you kept everything going for us. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Very good. Thank you very much, and